So, in our path, in our trajectory, we would say, we began with the idea of repentance. Another word might be regret, that things are not as they could be, as something in us tells us they should be. We cannot long for something we do not know. If I tell you there's a certain fruit that grows on Jupiter, you may be curious, you may have curiosity about it, but you can't long for it because you don't know it. You don't know what I'm talking about. So, in our spiritual life, the fact that we have a longing for something is a clue to us that what we're looking for is not something to be added to us. It's there already. Maybe we know the story of the man who faithfully said his prayers every night and had been doing so for a long time. And then one day the tempter came to him and said, "Why are you making all this racket every night? You're never getting an answer." And he felt discouraged. And so that night he didn't say his prayers. And another night he didn't say his prayers. Finally, on the third night, there was a sound of wings in his room, and there was a visitor. "I've been sent to ask why you no longer are saying your prayers." And he said, "Well, never got an answer. I thought no one was listening. I thought there was no one. It was just me." And the angel said, "I've been told to tell you that the voice with which you were saying your prayers was God's own voice." In other words, our impulse to unity is not something we have invented. It's innate in us. And the spiritual process is only about letting go, washing away everything that prevents our recognition of that. Now, yesterday we focused, perhaps, that's what I talked about, maybe you did something else, but we focused on the idea of appreciation, of admiration, of recognition of beauty, because that's a beautiful way of getting us out of our habits, of our fix, of our mess, of our swamp. I don't know if you recognize, Nirtan was talking about Baron Munchausen pulling himself out of the swamp by his own hair. Well, in a way we do that, but we do that by seeing the beautiful. What is the beautiful? What is beautiful for one person may not touch another person. Hazrat Inayat Khan told the story of once in some court, the nobles, the king and the nobles, or the sultan and the nobles were sitting around. They lived at a different rhythm in those days. They were sitting around discussing philosophy and beauty, and they were trying to decide if beauty was absolute or if it was relative. These are the kind of thing that philosophers are interested in. And so the king said, he proposed an experiment. And he called called the chokidar. If you've been to India, you know what I mean. Chokidar is like the porter, the portero. He's always by the door and he does all the menial tasks. He called the chokidar. And he said, in the courtyard there are these children playing. There were children of the palace, of the, you know, a whole mix of kids playing. And he said to the chokidar, here is a cap. You go and you put it on the head of the child that is most beautiful. The chokidar was used to unusual assignments. And so he took the cap and he went and looked at the children and he tried it on one child and he tried it on another, tried it on a third, tried it on the heads of all the children. And at last he came back to the king leading a child by the hand with the cap on his head, and he said, Majesty, forgive my presumption, but I feel that it looks best on this child. And all the courtiers understood, because it was the chokidar's own child and not very beautiful in comparison to the other children. So, in other words, beauty may be universal, it may be everywhere, but it's up to us to recognize it. And that was our hope yesterday, was to try to tune ourselves and to look a little more with open eyes around, trying to recognize beauty more. Good. Today, perhaps we could look at that mysterious, you can't separate them really. I was going to say the mysterious combination, but they live together, of the heart and love. Love is so paradoxical. Everybody in the world loves love, unless they have some imbalance, mental illness. But basically, everybody thinks that love is the best thing. So why is the world in such a mess? The path of love is not an easy path. We love to say we love. And we heard that beautiful song yesterday, all you need is love. Well, that's true. But in order to live in love, you have to go through many tests and trials. And if we look at our own life with some objective detachment, most of us will say, yeah, I have not loved as much as I wish I had. Hazrat Khan, in his collection of sayings, Nirtan, has that beautiful poem about the heart. And the heart, there again, everybody thinks they know what is the heart. Probably if you stopped, you know, interviewed 100 people on the street, 99 would say, oh yes, I'm a heart-centered person. Again, I say, if that were true, why is the world in the mess it's in? If we really were all living in our heart, wouldn't it be a different world? I won't read the whole poem, but there are some beautiful lines in this, and you can go and look it up yourself. It's near the beginning of Nirta. He says, the heart has the mind of a child. The heart has the mind of a child. Beautiful thought. What does it mean? How is the mind of a child? Open. Sorry? I heard someone say something.
Oh, I said open.
Open. Open.
Receptive.
Receptive.
Love-giving.
Love-giving.
Unconditional.
Unconditional.
Innocent.
Seeks simplicity.
Seeks simplicity. Does it seek it, or it doesn't recognize
it?
Complexity?
Naturally.
So the mind of a child is simple, open, and unconditional. If the child says, "You're my papa. I love you." That's it. There's no debate. There's no dispute. There's no, well, I love you on Tuesdays, but you know, Wednesday morning. That's all it is. So it's totally, it's complete. And our heart could be like that. But how many of us have been in relationships or at the start of a relationship and we've said, yeah, well, I don't know, yes, but... There's something, we're at least one step away from having a child, a heart which is like the mind of a child. Beauty is heart's only object. We have this beautiful trinity, you could say, in our Sufi teaching, in our invocation. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. And those three qualities relate to each other and create each other. So, what is it that awakens love? Is the perception of beauty. And when we perceive beauty and feel love, of course we are inspired to hopefully to act harmoniously, to as harmoniously as we are capable of. We can always do better. But and when there is harmony, there is beauty, because there's no beauty if there's no harmony. And when there's beauty, then we're back with love, and so it goes. There's a beautiful cycle. And we say the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. Well, of course, perfection is a state, but it's also an action. And perhaps we could understand it, that it's our task to try to perfect those qualities in us so that we can reflect them, to perfect love, to perfect harmony, to perfect beauty. And I said at the beginning that the path of love is not easy. Now in the second half of the poem, we start to get the other aspects of love. First part is very inspiring. Angels are there, children, the mind of a child is there. Now we hear the heart is itself its own medicine. The heart, all its own wounds, heals. In other words, the open heart is going to be getting knocks in life. It's going to be getting a lot of rough treatment in life. And the only medicine is the heart itself. In other words, we have a tendency to say, oh, that's painful, I'll close up and try to find some medicine for my heart. I don't know, holiday in the Bahamas, I don't know. Anyway, but it's the living heart which is capable of healing itself. The heart, all its own wounds heals, and none can ever imagine the pain that the loving heart feels. So, yes, we say all you need is love, it's wonderful, let's just love each other and everything will be fine, but to really love is not easy, and often it's very painful. Why? Because love is about sacrifice. It's about giving the beloved whatever the beloved should wish. Maybe you know the story about the Sufi who was in love with some lady and he was visiting her. And then one day he came and someone else was there. And so he went away and he waited at the corner until the other gentleman came out. The other gentleman came out and he saw this man waiting for him. He thought, uh-oh. That's it. But the Sufi said, friend, come, don't worry. I only want to give you a piece of advice. For the sake of the one whom we both love, when she treats you as she has treated me, you treat the next man the way I treat you. This is self-sacrifice. Most of us don't have that strength of detachment, but we can aspire to it. The path of the heart is thorny, but leads in the end to bliss. If you were listening last night to the message paper, you probably heard Moshe talking about the path of thorns that he himself had to tread to spread the message, and that his path was like walking on unsheathed swords. That was a path he chose not because of some political conviction, but because of love, because he felt love for the divine presence, and out of service for the divine, he felt called to serve the message. And so he gave that. And in the end, the bliss that the heart feels is the satisfaction of having given all for the sake of the ideal. And we cannot expect a human beloved to be perfect. But by our loving humans, imperfect humans, imperfect, oddly shaped each other, we can learn the path of love for the unseen, the abstract, the divine. And that's where the real bliss is, when we can rise above the distinctions and differences and come to that place. So, we'll do just a little bit of a practice, and it's a practice you can take away with you and do on your own later if you wish. It's repeating three lines or a portion of the prayer Khatam. The prayer says, "Give us thy great goodness." What comes next?
Teach
us thy loving forgiveness. And then raise us above distinctions and differences. Now, before we do the practice, we have to look carefully at these words. Give us thy great goodness. This is one that sometimes causes a lot of perplexity. If God is so good, how come the world is in such a mess? It's not our fault. It must be God. So what do we mean by God's great goodness? Do we mean that everything will be good according to our understanding? In the morning, a person likes tea and not coffee, so goodness should be only tea in the morning and no coffee. That's a very limited idea of goodness. Goodness is not about our comfort. Sometimes goodness can be difficult, can be painful. Classic example, although technology has advanced now, it's not like it used to be, but the classic example, we've seen again and again, little children getting inoculated with cries of pain or distress. But the mother and the doctor, or the nurse, know that this is good for the child. If the child had a choice, they would run away. But this is good for them. And so that little discomfort for a second is nothing compared to what they're being saved from if they didn't have that discomfort. And we can say, oh, why did X or Y or Z happen? That's so terrible. Perhaps it is, but we're unable to know what would have happened if that had not happened. Because we can't calculate all the possibilities in the world. All we can do is say, this has happened. And try to make the best of the situation. But when we say, give us thy great goodness, I say again, we're not asking for everything to be arranged according to our comfort and convenience. Give us thy great goodness. Could you make all airplane flights only half an hour, please? That would be good.
Yeah.
We think. Really what we're saying is, give us thy presence. Because if we really are aware, awake, in love with the beloved, in love with God, then goodness is to be with the divine, and to be absent from the divine is not good. And if you're present with the divine, then whatever happens doesn't really matter. Yes, there will be pain, there will be physical discomforts of all kinds, but if you're feeling that presence, then you're in that goodness. So give us thy great goodness really means let me be aware of you. And if we are aware of you, then thy loving forgiveness is an easy lesson to learn. Then it's easy, or easier. Give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness. And if we are able to forgive, then the third step is also easy, to be raised above the distinctions and differences. So we'll repeat these lines a few times, and since we know already that the physical, it's good to involve the physical in the process, we can do this with a gesture, or gestures, a series of gestures. So we can say, with our hands in a receptive way, give us thy great goodness. And then teach us thy loving forgiveness. So we're opening the heart. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Just like that. Is it clear? Are there comments or questions?
Can you please say something about forgiving? What's needed to do it?
Yeah.
To be in it?
Yeah, forgiving, forgiveness really is not something we can just dismiss in a sentence. It's something that really deserves a whole retreat because it's a big topic.
Let's do so.
Okay. Maybe that's the theme for next year's summer school, thy loving forgiveness.
May I?
Let me finish a thought here. Forgiveness I think that there's probably two steps required. One is recognition, because you can't really forgive what you haven't admitted. You know, if you're trying to pretend something that didn't happen, you can't say, "Yeah, I forgive you." That doesn't work. So you have to be able to look at it, and then there has to come a kind of disengagement, a kind of detachment of yourself from that. An understanding that we are not defined by what happens to us. Yes, bad things happen to us, terrible things that people don't deserve, but if we hold on to it and say, "Oh, how you have wounded me," we remain captive to the experience, and we have to be able to let it go so that we can. Hazrat Anayakan talks about erasing the past, although he says that sometimes when things are very deeply engraved in our consciousness, it's very difficult to erase the past. But by erasing the past, I think he means at least erasing the emotional reaction to the past, so that we're no longer held there. That's briefly. Nuria?
I feel like I know a little bit about this subject of forgiveness. We all do. We've been betrayed by loved ones or family members or in work. We've been misunderstood professionally or whatever. Does anyone have that experience also?
Yeah.
So, Murshid Nawab was just saying, Murshid teaches us that not to keep going over and over it again. It's like making a rut when we get stuck in the mud, yeah? So the practices help, the breath practices help, but what I have found helps me so much is to pray for the person that hurt me. When I pray for them, something changes in my mind and my heart. And then I start to see that perhaps it was a form of ignorance or misunderstanding that led to that action. Prayer is a really, it's one of the, breath and prayer are the best medicines. Welcome. Thank you, Murshid Nawab. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I have a question on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Afterwards, can we talk afterwards?
Just a second. I just want to add to what you said that Hazrat Inayat Khan had a student he gave her the advice every night before you go to bed send love to all the world. This I suppose was after the First World War. And she said, well, she was very honest. She said, well, what should I can't send to that particular nation. Murshid said, okay, send it where you can send it. And so she would send it to, you know, everybody with this postal code, but not that postal code. And then after a while, she came to him and said, you know, now I feel a change. Now I can also send it there. So it's about developing a quality, a tendency. It's about opening up a channel. And after a while, maybe it's hard to pray for X person in your history, but you can start with some of the less difficult people.
I'd like to share something.
We cannot hear this.
Okay. In the Second World War, there was Corey and Betty Ten Boom, who were taken to a concentration camp, and Betty died. Corey came out, and she did a lot of talks and a lot of work to rebuild relationships. And at one point, the jailer in the concentration camp, who had beaten her sister, came to ask her forgiveness. And he stretched out his hand, and she couldn't forgive him because he beat her sister terribly. So she asked, you know, she took his hand and she asked, God, I can't forgive, I can't forgive this man, but please do it.
Yeah.
And she felt this extremely warm stream going through her arm, so we can ask help.
Yes.
Okay, I know there are other, but I'd like to do some practice and leave some time for the next part of the program. So, again, the gesture is first to be receptive, to really feel that there's some presence coming into the palms of our hands. Give us thy great goodness. And then, from the heart, teach us thy loving forgiveness. And then raise us above the distinctions and differences. Just like that. Is it clear? So let's close our eyes for a moment and have silence. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences. Give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences.